This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. 2017 was a pretty great year for games, with the further development of esports to the release of Breath of the Wild, Mario Odyssey, and a host of other games. Reviews and Previews editor Ray Carcello is going to speak with us about some of the best games of 2017 and what games we can look forward to in 2018. Thanks so much for joining me, Ray.
Thanks for having me again, Mason.
Could you tell me what are some of the most notable games of 2017?
Oh, so 2017's been a great year. I mean, it's been one of the best years for games in a long time, I think, honestly. If you just look at all the great stuff that's come across from so many genres. But, I mean, I think the first game that comes to mind, I think that really defined 2017, and for us here at EGM was our game of the year, was Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Honestly, the best, I think most complete experience. It redefined the classic franchise, and for us, it just blew everybody away with how open it was and everything you do. So for us, that was top game of the year. But there was lots of other great stuff. Resident Evil 7 is up there, again, redefining a franchise. Cuphead, as an indie darling, came out of nowhere, was a platforming and action shooter juggernaut that was a 2D masterpiece with 1930s animation. So it's been a really great year. I mean, I could go on and on. We have a top 25 on EGM, but there's so many great games that came out this year. 2017 was a really strong year for games in general.
That's true. With Breath of the Wild, for me, it was like they had the RPG aspect plus it had like the puzzles in there, and I'm a sucker for puzzles.
Yes. Yeah. No. Breath of the Wild was great because it was definitely, when you consider how action-oriented Zelda typically is action and puzzles, and this felt like it just went more puzzle-oriented, out giving you the freedom to interact with the world how you wanted to and to overcome the obstacles however you wished.
Yeah,
it felt more puzzle-heavy than combat-heavy, which I think was part of the reason why they went with the breakable weapons and whatnot, but it was such a rich world that they created that they just wanted you to have fun with it. I think that was really Nintendo's mantra to begin with, because even if you look at Mario Odyssey, which was our number four game of the year, it's another game where it's just like, you know, we're not even going to give you a life counter. We're just going to basically be like, go out, have as much fun as you want, play how you want to play. We're going to fill this game with a ton of content for you, and you just go hog wild. And I think that was Nintendo's mantra this year, but I think Zelda, also with its great story, and, of course, how that redefined that franchise was just a little better. But that so great, so wonderful.
You're right. There's been so many games that came out this year that do you think that any other games were kind of overshadowed by these larger franchises?
Yeah, it definitely is. It's easy for certain games. Like, I know Bethesda released a couple of great games in Prey and Wolfenstein. I think Prey, for sure, got overshadowed, I think, and kind of was under a lot of people's radar. But, I mean, or was easily written off as just like, oh, it's Bioshock in space. But I think that, too, was really great at giving players agency and giving players the ability to overcome obstacles on their own. Giving them the tools and then being like, if you think about it, whatever you think you can do in this world, you can probably do it. Whether it was a grenade that literally just turned everything around you into recycled usable materials, or the glue gun, which allows you to literally create staircases inside out of the bullets that it shoots. So I think Prey is definitely a game that was kind of underrated and kind of fell under a lot of people's radar, and is definitely something people should check out if they have the time and are looking for that kind of exploration and fun, but not from a major already previously established franchise.
You know, the one thing I remember from Prey was how every few days someone would break like a speed running record on it. And it went from like 7 to 5 to 2 minutes. And I think it went lower than that. I thought that was pretty crazy for that game.
Yeah, there were some glitches that if you figured out, and that's the thing, right? If you figured out a way to do it, you could do it without actually breaking severely breaking the game. But if you were played the way you're supposed to play it, trust me, it's like a solid 10 to 15 hour experience with a great story and some really great characters. And again, I don't want to just boil it down to BioShock and space, but if you liked BioShock, I think you'll really like Prey.
You did it, though. You did it. But I understand. Yeah. No, I like BioShock, and I may end up playing Prey because it does sound good.
Yeah, I mean, if you like that kind of first-person shooter game with weird towers and a beautiful world to explore, it's definitely something I think that you'll enjoy.
Last month, PlayStation held their PlayStation Experience event. What were some of the things that were showcased there that we can expect in 2018?
So Sony PlayStation Experience was an interesting show this year. There wasn't as much there from Sony themselves as I probably would have liked to have seen. I was hoping for a Spider-Man or a God of War demo, which are still supposed to drop in 2018, but neither were there aside from like cheesy photo booths. What they did have there though was Detroit 2 Human, which is the latest from Quantic Dream, the guys who did Heavy Rain and Beyond Two Souls, and that's very interesting because they're experimenting with a tree where you can see all the branching choices you could have made depending on what you do after you play. It gets very really really deep and really detailed, and it's really the next step I think in that kind of choose your own adventure. Game. I played the first level of that at PlayStation Experience, and that was a lot of fun, and it was a lot more dramatic. I mean, well, probably as dramatic as you would expect or if you've seen in demos, but it was definitely, if you like a classic adventure game, what Quantic Dream is doing there is very interesting. The other one I saw was Dreams from Media Molecule, which is basically the guys who made Little Big Planet and Tearaway. And it's another one of these really fun, really inventive adventures, action adventures where, you play as these small little protagonists in a huge world that they've created all in engine. But if that's not your thing, much like Little Big Planet, they also give you their tools. They give you their game engine to create your own stuff and to create your own dreams and to share it all with people out there. And I think that's really the thing that is going to excite a lot of people. I mean, they've basically got their own audio editing software in there. It looks almost like Audacity inside this game, so you can actually record your own music through the PlayStation mic or your own voices and put them in the games that you create within this game and then share it with other people. They're showing me the tool set, it blew my mind how deep it goes.
Oh my God, that sounds so interactive. But I could already imagine some people are probably going to use it to troll, but I think that'll be funny too.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, they're going to have obviously moderators in this community, and they're going to have people who are going to, you can upvote and downvote and whatnot. But I think just the fact that they're putting out such a powerful tool for people for what will basically be a $60 experience, I think is really exciting to see what they do. And I mean, Little Big Planet was a huge success, especially as they went later on and in that game, and they did the sequels for that. And I think people got more and more creative, and I think that this is going to be Media Molecule's crowning achievement when Dreams comes out, because it looks absolutely phenomenal. And again, the tools that they're going to give players are it's really, really exciting.
I just have to know, has there been any announcements about Final Fantasy VII? Because I try to keep my ear to the ground for that, but... did they say anything at the PlayStation Experience?
No, to my knowledge, nothing for Final Fantasy VII came out at PSX. It was actually a very slow year for news and for reveals, and not much was there. They showed off a couple new VR games. They showed off some more of Concrete Genie, which is another very creative game similar to Dreams or Little Big Planet. And it just, but in terms of announcements, very, very little came out of PSX in terms of real news. This was, they said they're trying to do this as more of a fan experience, they want it to have a very different vibe than E3. So, unfortunately, this year, to much to the disappointment of a lot of people who were there, and press and fans alike, there weren't many major announcements that came out of this.
That is a bit disappointing. But the VR stuff, what VR games did they have there?
Oh, goodness, I can't believe I'm blanking on this. It was an amazing, it's a 4v4 first-person shooter. Imagine, it's basically Rainbow Six in VR.
Ooh.
It was the one announcement that did of a new game that did come from the show. And I can tell you, I played it, and it was absolutely stellar. Playing for a first-person shooter like that in VR, I absolutely couldn't get enough of this. It's a Sony exclusive for PSVR. I can't believe I'm blanking on the name. Firewall. That's the name of it. Ha ha. I just remember Firewall 00 Hour, I think it is. Firewall is the main title, though. 4v4 VR experience. All online online co-op and versus. They're going to have team deathmatch. They're going to have capture the point. They're going to have objective-based modes. We played an objective-based mode where one of our guys had to hack a laptop or get into a villa, hack a laptop, cover him, or we could kill the other four players. It was one life to live. It was very kind of search and destroy-esque, if you're familiar with Call of Duty. But doing it in VR and doing it in that first person, it was absolutely a completely new experience. It felt new. It made me really enjoy a first-person shooter again in a way I hadn't enjoyed in years. The tension of peeking around a corner and not knowing if a guy was there and having to actually react and jumping and ducking and diving, like, actually in real life in order to, am I guy doing it in VR? It's really exciting because I feel like this is the kind of game that we need. This is the kind of next step that VR needs to really kind of grasp onto the public. And that's a game that's also coming in 2018 and was probably my biggest surprise of the show. It's a game, it's called Firewall. And that's definitely something that people should be excited for if you have a PlayStation VR.
Oh, man, I'm going to have to look that up now because that does sound like so much fun. Like, the competitor in me is like, oh, I get to move. Now it's like, be like fast reactions, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, obviously, you still use a joystick for the most part. Like, but it just, if you move your head, if you're moving around, your character will move with it as long as you're within the view space for the PlayStation VR, and it was just absolutely phenomenal. Could not get enough of it. Definitely highly, highly recommended to keep an eye out on that for 2018.
Now, I was reading that Nintendo is going to be heading into mobile games like more, not just the Pokemon Go, like giving out the licenses. How successful do you think they're going to be when it comes to mobile games, though?
I think Nintendo will continue to be successful with mobile because I think what's going to happen is you're going to probably see the 3DS start to kind of fade away. And when the 3DS fades away, you're going to see Nintendo probably focus on, you know, you'll get different experiences that you can only get on mobile phone from Nintendo. And that'll get a lot of attention and get certain people playing. And then for the hardcore gamers, even though it's still portable, you'll have your Switch. That's going to be where your AAA titles are. That's going to be where your Mario's and your Legends of Zelda's and your Metroids. Your Metroid Prime 4 is coming and whatnot. And I think that, again, it just shows that Nintendo knows how to diversify their lineup and that they can't – with the Switch is too much of a competitor with the 3DS, but I think they realize that they can go with mobile and give different experiences, not just like Pokemon Go or not just like Mario Run or Fire Emblem Heroes, but give, like, really – different experiences on mobile, more interactive, things that could, like, you know, could use things like GPS, like Pokemon Go does, and really use that to provide an experience that you don't normally get. And that's what Nintendo's always been about, and that's why they've always had a home console and a portable. And I think the mobile division will be what, you know, again, kind of replacing the 3DS, where it'll provide a portable experience that you can't get anywhere else. Only from Nintendo, and I think that Nintendo's shown that sometimes they're a little too far ahead of the ball, but usually they're ahead of the curve when it comes to what people want and starting new trends, whether it's motion control or near field new communication or portability. So I think that this is gonna mobile games will be another gold mine for Nintendo that they're waiting to strike.
The only reason I ask is because, you know, when it comes to mobile games, I know some hardcore gamers are like, you can't consider your cell phone to be like a console. Like you can't consider them to be gamers. So for Nintendo to be like, hey, we're going to put our hat on this. This is going to be ours, their little flagship. It really shows like, hey, man, maybe cell phone games aren't that bad.
I mean, cell phone gaming has come along super far. I mean, it's not, sure, you've still got your Match 3, Bejeweled, or whatever, like things out there that people are kind of like, meh. But there's a lot of really quality games that have come out on mobile over the years, or have ported to mobile. And I think Nintendo knows that also, you know, for what hardcore gamers may think of the gaming community, gaming has become so much larger than that in recent years. I mean, you've got people who are, because of cell phones, gaming for the first time and using that as a gateway to consoles. So I think the fact that they see that mobile phones could be a way to draw in an audience they aren't already tapping into, and considering Nintendo's already family-first mindset when it comes to games, I think going for the mobile phones is a smart evolution and game plan for them going forward. That honestly, the fact that more companies don't do it is kind of surprising.
Oh man, I'm trying to think of this article that I saw. It was a Chinese mobile game that was on the cell phone, and they're like, "Oh, it's finally coming to the U.S. market." And all I remember when I saw the trailer for it was that you get to play as Batman and Superman in it, and it looked like the layout, the map looked just like the Summoner's Rift in League of Legends. So I was wondering how long this was going to last before somebody like slapped a lawsuit on it, or was it completely legit? Have you heard of this game yet, or no?
No, I haven't heard of it, but I'm sure that it's as soon as it comes to the States, I'm sure there'll be a huge licensing lawsuit. So I would not be surprised at all if that the second you're using anything out of license, you're asking for trouble.
Yeah.
So I don't care how popular it is. Warner Brothers, I'm sure, will crack down on that.
No, because it looked really interesting. You get to play as the Joker or Batman, Superman, and it was really cool. Like Superman, if he when he was flying, he had different like attack speed and like all these bonuses if he was on the floor and different moveset. And it was like all just on your phone you got to play with. And I don't know if they have the license or not. The article really didn't say. It just said that it was really, really, you know, famous and really well liked in China. Not saying anything's wrong with China, but I hate to say it. Most of the time it's bootleg anyway. So I don't know if it's coming over here and it'll be legit.
No, that's true. Because of the way their import-export laws work, a lot of things come off sort of bootleg in China in terms of they have even different versions of the consoles that we have. Like they've had different N64s and GameCubes. Like they had to be specifically, I mean, it's too large a market to ignore, but it had to be. A lot of times Nintendo and other companies have had to cater and modify their designs in order to appeal to the Chinese market, which is very much its own, an entity onto its own. So what might seem bootleg to us, you're right, they might have, through Tencent or some other company, they might have the licensing for this, but I would be a little surprised. I would be a little surprised at something this popular, actually, if it didn't have the licensing, but it's not to put it past anybody, you know, that they wouldn't try to use something that isn't theirs. Again, especially considering the market is so isolated from the rest of the Chinese gaming market is so isolated from the rest of the world gaming market. But, I mean, that's you know, again, China is an entity unto itself, so I wouldn't be surprised if this is if somebody did something in order to try to appeal to them specifically, knowing their tastes and considering what a hotbed that could potentially be if you can get something big to strike in China, considering, you know, there are over a billion people there.
And most of them like to game. Speaking of like big entities, you know, Disney, they purchased Fox. Do you think that's going to affect games at all?
Well, I mean, it could potentially, just because now there's so many more licenses under Disney's umbrella that, I mean, it could be a good thing in terms of Disney might want to capitalize on certain franchises they have, like Avatar and Aliens and Simpsons now in that gaming market. But since Disney doesn't do gaming themselves, it would only really be a benefit for whatever third party they license it to. You know, much like EA with Star Wars. Obviously, EA messed that up. But they would try to, you know, it would be a benefit. It would be good for games if Disney wanted to see more of these properties and really utilize all of these properties that they've now acquired, because they acquired a huge, huge catalog of entertainment properties, that some of which haven't really been touched in years. And it would just make a lot of sense if they tried to use the digital realm to either revive them or at least get some sort of money back from them, considering it really wouldn't cost them too much besides the licensing and the shared costs of whatever third-party developer they find to make the game.
The reason I ask was because there's one game that I'm like, it's really going to come out well, is Kingdom Hearts. Could you imagine The Simpsons and Kingdom Hearts? That would be so much fun.
I didn't even think of that, but that's true. That could happen now. You could have Springfield in Kingdom Hearts,
right?
Somehow. Maybe not Kingdom Hearts 3, but maybe another sequel at some point down the road.
Yep.
I would like to think that Kingdom Hearts 3 is farther in the process than they've revealed to us. They can't just go adding a Simpsons to the world.
Like, they're going to have to. Like, it's going to be like some weird like DLC, or it's going to be something. But I mean, like, it's going to be really exciting. Maybe they'll have like Fantastic Four, the X-Men in there. It's going to be kind of cool, like that these games will have so much more of the Marvel universe in them.
I mean, that's the thing I think that a lot of people were really excited for, of course, is that you've basically now completely consolidated the Marvel universe back under one umbrella. You know, now that you have the shared rights between Sony for Spider-Man, and now that you've basically reacquired X-Men, Deadpool, and Fantastic Four, there's very little now that's still out there that Marvel no longer has, and that people, you know, and obviously these are characters that people hugely care about. And now it gives you all this stuff that they can do in the future. I mean, all these crossovers, you can finally put Wolverine back in the Avengers. You can finally bring all these characters back into Marvel versus Capcom. It's like, you know, it's a very exciting time for that front, of course. But of course, there's also that worrying that now Disney owns about 40% of Hollywood. But you know, it's good and bad. There's good and bad with everything, right?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, Disney's not that bad. They usually take care of their properties, so hopefully they'll take care of all of these characters too, right?
That's the hope. That's the hope that they'll do everything right. I mean, my worry is that we'll never, you know, after Deadpool 2 comes out, is that will be the end of it, that they won't do another R-rated Deadpool after that. So that's the only thing that I'm concerned with, is just how much will they not be willing to push the envelope now that they have all these characters, even though they play better with an R rating, which is kind of anti-Disney.
That is true. That is true. Well, thanks so much, Ray, for coming on. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find you at?
You can find me at Twitter on Twitter at Ray Carcillo. Same thing on Instagram and Facebook. You can also read my stuff, of course, at egmnow.com. And yeah, you know, there's also the EGM Twitter, which is just EGMnow. So so you can find me on all those outlets.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter @MasonVeraPayne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.